The primary mandate I had for myself in making this decision was to have it based on the potential for my growth as a player, and that has always steered me in the right direction. But I am also at a point in my life where it is of equal importance to find an opportunity that encourages my evolution as a man. Moving out of my comfort zone to a new city and community which offers the greatest potential for my contribution and personal growth. With this in mind, I have decided that I am going to join the Golden State Warriors. The Red Rock Basketball Monster Show. My name is Josh Lloyd, and you can find me on Twitter at @RedRock_BBall. We are here to discuss, of course, the Kevin Durant news, which is the biggest news in the NBA for the last 2 years, at least since LeBron returned to Cleveland. We're going to talk about the rest of free agency since the first free agency podcast, which I do suggest you check out with myself and Aaron Bruski, where we talked for 2.5 hours on every free agent signing that had happened to date. There's been more that's happened since then, so I am joined today by Basketball Monsters' Kyle McEwen. Kyle, how are you going?
Going good, Josh. Glad to be on the show again.
It's good to have you back, Kyle. Now, just for anyone who doesn't know, and I'm sure everybody does know, where can they follow you on Twitter?
You can follow me at RotoKyleNBA on the Twitter.
You got to go and follow Kyle there for all his NBA takes and Bernie Sanders comments.
I tried desperately to keep the Bernie Sanders comments off there, but I have two Twitter accounts, and every once in a while I'll forget, and I'll start retweeting anti-Hillary or Bernie stuff on the NBA one, and I apologize to anybody who gets caught up in that.
I get confused where I say that because I see it on your Facebook, and I don't know if it's coming on your Facebook or your Twitter, but hey, I respect your passion for it. We're not here to talk politics though, Kyle, because I know nothing about US politics.
It's okay. It's best to avoid it. It's infuriating, and we all have no chance.
Well, we had our election here on the weekend, and we still don't know who won. So we're 6 days, 6 days, 5 days, 5 days since the election. We still don't know who actually won. So we don't have a controlling party or leader at this point. So it's all chaos down here, and I'm glad to be getting out of it tomorrow and heading over to your area of the world.
We shouldn't go down that rabbit hole of politics with me, brother.
No, I agree with that. I definitely won't be able to keep up. We're talking NBA, Kyle. We're talking about all the free agent signings, I said, that have happened since that first podcast. And of course, I think we do need to start with the 2 year contract signed by small forward Luke Marmute, who signed for 2 years in Los Angeles with the Clippers for 4.4. Now, let's go to Kevin Durant, because I think that's going to take up the majority of this podcast, as everybody knows. If you don't know, that Kevin Durant has signed with the Golden State, or will sign with the Golden State Warriors, and you listen to this podcast, then I'm not really sure why you are listening if you aren't aware of that news. We're not here to break news to you. We're here to discuss news and to get into it. So without further ado,
let's get to it.
Almost forgot to push that. Kevin Durant, 2 years, player option on the second year. He's joining the Golden State Warriors. There is a myriad of hot takes, lukewarm takes, cold takes, whatever you want to mention. Everyone's got an opinion on this on the internet. Kyle, let's start with your opinion then.
I love it. I like that it's a player choosing to go somewhere where he has a better chance to win. You know, when you sit around and you talk to your friends, even just having fun talking about who are the best five players ever, it's always guys who have won a bunch of championships. So if Kevin Durant wants to be considered one of the best players ever, he's going to have to win multiple championships, at least one, to get into that conversation. And the best place to go is Golden State, because they have the best core of players. I mean, if you're just comparing the roster of Oklahoma City to what Golden State has, it's easy to make the decision where you say, oh, I have a better chance to win more with Golden State. And if that's the basis of your decision as far as deciding whether to stay or whether to go, you got to go. So I like it. It's a lot of people are worried about what it's going to mean for the NBA, but injuries and a multitude of other things could really change the landscape leading into the playoffs next year. So is it good that Golden State has somebody to insulate them from bad injuries? Yes. But we don't know what's going to happen, although it will be fun to watch Golden State win next year.
Yeah, we don't know what's going to happen. We've got a fair idea what's going to happen, and you'd have to think that they've got every chance in the world to win this title and the next couple. But KD could break his foot again. Like, who knows? Again, that's, you know, he did have three issues with his foot just a season ago. That could happen. Anything could happen with these things, and you don't want anything to happen. In terms of, I've got quite a bit to say on it, to be honest. I have no issue with KD choosing where he wants to go. Myself, my thought processes was, I just wanted chaos. I just wanted him to go anywhere. I want him to go to Charlotte. I wanted him to go to Milwaukee. I want him to go anywhere just to completely just turn everything on its head. Going back to Oklahoma City wouldn't have done that. Going to Golden State turns things on its head in a different way. I wanted him to go just anywhere, just throw things completely crazy and make the league just turn upside down. I've got no issue with him choosing to go there. What I don't like is hearing people calling him weak because you went to a team that beat you. Like, who cares? Like, so if the Thunder had have lost to the Spurs and then he went to the Warriors, it would have been okay. Because he beat the Spurs, because they beat the Spurs and then lost to the Warriors, he can't go to the Warriors. But if they hadn't have got that far, then it would have been okay for him to go there. That is an argument I don't understand. Yeah, they beat him. So what? I don't think that's weak by any stretch.
My roommate walked into the house today and he woke me up by screaming, "Durant's a coward."
That's a pretty popular opinion from a lot of people. I don't see that. That's an odd thought process to me, to think just because you got beaten by a team that you can't go and play for them. I don't really understand that. And the other thing is, if people are going to, and as you mentioned, people have discussions about players and they have to have won championships, I'm very much anti the championship or bust narrative of things. There's 30 teams, one team can win it. Successful seasons don't necessarily have to result in a championship. Do you think that, basically what you're saying is that in order to be a legend, you need to win a championship, but don't do what's best to win a championship. That's what a lot of people are saying. So you can't have it both ways.
Somebody who looks very hard into NBA history, is very much into the NBA today, you can objectively sit and say, okay, this player was better than that player, regardless of how many championships they won. And that's fine. But when you're having just kind of surface conversations with people and you're listing off, your favorite NBA players, a lot of the times the argument, especially when you get to, Michael Jordan and whoever, it's always, well, how many rings? So it's just a reality of that argument. And if you don't reach that, if you don't win a championship, I'm sorry, there is a stink on a guy like Charles Barkley because he didn't achieve that.
I agree that it's there. I absolutely despise it. I hate that thought process. I hated the LeBron 2-4 bullshit that we heard before this season. I hated all of that sort of stuff. I hate this. And you know what? And a lot of it's to do with my sporting choices and teams that I follow. I've mentioned this plenty of times on the podcast that my Australian football team hasn't won a championship since 1954. So maybe I bristle a little bit at that, thinking, okay, we haven't won a championship in 60 years. My favorite NFL team was the Miami Dolphins, or is the Miami Dolphins. And my favorite player was Dan Marino, and I would hear it all the time. Oh, he never won a ring, so he was terrible. Like, cool. That just, it never made sense to me. It always rubs me the wrong way when I hear that sort of stuff. But it's a prevailing thought amongst people. It's just something I definitely might buck up against when I hear that sort of talk. But Durant, again, if you think that rings mean everything, and this is, I'm not directing this at you, Kyle, but if you think that rings are what makes a legend, then you can't fault Durant for going to win rings. You can't have it both ways. He made the decision to win rings, and if you think that's all that matters, then that's exactly what he did. And no problem with it whatsoever. Let's talk about what it does fantasy-wise, Kyle, because the number one player was undoubtedly going to be Steph Curry next season. He was undoubtedly the number one player this season. He was the number one player the year before. This opens things up tremendously. You've got lots of people who are going around. Russell Westbrook is now the absolute number one, no doubt. I don't think it is that clear-cut to me. Durant and Curry will have to suffer some sort of a hit. Efficiency-wise, they'll probably go up, but you would have to think counting stats-wise, especially scoring, they take somewhat of a dive. Not much, but somewhat of a dive. How do you see those two, we'll start with those two guys, Curry and Durant, how do you see their seasons playing out in terms of what effect they have on each other?
Do they actually, well, here's the question that I don't know. How much does it impact them? Because does Steph Curry just go down to 28 points per game, and does Kevin Durant go down to 20? Like, do they still get so many possessions? Because we see possessions come away from Klay Thompson. We see ball handling and opportunities come away from Draymond Green. Or do they just play their bench less, too, to get more possessions for these guys? Because Steph Curry played 34 minutes per game last year. Draymond, we saw the Golden State Warriors play their players more minutes this year than they did 2 years ago. So I'm not... I'm just not sure that it's going to be Kevin Durant and Steph Curry taking as huge of a full-on fantasy value hit as much as it is probably Klay Thompson and Draymond Green. How do you see it?
I think that Klay does take the biggest hit. Now, Klay attempted 17 shots per game last season. Steph attempted 20. I could see, you know, Thompson losing 4 or 5 of those shots. Harrison Barnes took 10 shots a game. They're obviously gone. Bogut took, what did he take, 2 shots a game? 4 shots a game? So there's 14 shots between Bogut and Barnes that will be redistributed. Yeah, Durant, you pretty much automatically gets those. Yeah, 2 or 3, or maybe 4 or so come off Thompson, maybe 1 or 2 come off Steph. And then I think what you said is right, that they both maybe lose 2 points per game, but efficiency-wise, and a lot of their value comes, Steph's comes from hitting 5 threes a game, but a lot of it comes from their efficiency. Steph also got over 2 steals per game. Durant can block shots. He got a huge amount of rebounds as well. None of that's going to change. So to me, they're both still in that top 5 area. And if you took Steph at 1, I don't think it's an incorrect decision. Now everyone will be very much on board that let's take Russ at number 1. But I think that Westbrook's in contention there. Durant, potentially, probably not. Curry and Harden. I think Curry, Harden, and Westbrook are the 3 guys that I'd be looking at number 1. And what it does is it means there's no clear-cut number 1 to me. You know, prior to this decision, if you didn't take Steph Curry at number 1, you would have been thought of as crazy. But now there's at least 3 guys there who you could make an argument for that could go at number 1. And I agree, Klay is going to take the biggest hit, and I don't think he's going to fall anywhere near that top 2 round sort of range. Draymond, somewhat, but most of his value comes from rebounds, assists, steals, blocks. So most of that's not going to change for him. He only averaged 14 points per game anyway and only took 10 shots a game. So maybe he takes 8 or 9 and scores 12 points. And maybe he then also averages 9 assists instead because he's feeding Durant and Curry and Thompson. So I don't think much changes with him. But
well,
go ahead.
And Durant's assists, I mean, so he had 5 assists last year. He may have fewer possessions, potentially be passing the ball to Klay Thompson, to Steph Curry, who, you know, guys who aren't Andre Robertson.
Yeah, exactly. So there's chances for all of these guys.
So, I mean, that means the guys are going to actually take shots when he passes it. They're going to hit shots at a higher clip when he passes it. If you're talking about who I think is going to have overall, you're definitely gonna have James Harden in that conversation with Mike D'Antoni, or D'Antoni being there in Houston. Now they're gonna play a sped up game. They've got the guys stretched out with Ryan Anderson there. I'm kind of interested to say, sorry if I'm taking us on a slight detour, but who's gonna play at center for Houston?
It has to be Clint Capella. I can't see who else. Well, they haven't signed anyone else. It has to be Capella, unless they're gonna play on Raku there.
Let's see though.
Onwuaku's a real threat to me. I think he's... And if Capella gets injured or doesn't get the starting job and Onwuaku plays, you know, high 20 minutes, he's going to be a fantasy start as well. His numbers come out looking really good. And I think he can be a real steal for them in the second round. I know that's completely off free agency topic, but yeah, Capella's going to start there and he's going to have every opportunity. Whether he succeeds or not remains to be seen, but I think... I'm pretty big on Capella. I think that he'll be... I think he'll be nice there. And really, who else is out there as a friend? Unless Festus Ezeli they bring in, but I think Capella's probably better than him at this point.
Do you think Harden improves under Mike D'Antoni, or do you think it's kind of a wash?
I had this discussion when D'Antoni was hired at the start of the offseason, or in the playoffs, whenever it was. And I thought, how does he realistically get better? Like, the numbers he put up are just... they're crazy good. And like, where does he get better? There's a chance he does get better, and yeah, maybe. But what he currently does is awesome in itself. And what did he average last season? 29, 6, and 7.5 with 3 triples, 1.7 steals, and 0.6 blocks. Like, how do you get better than that? Does he average 31 points a game? Does he average 8 assists? That's all possible. And does he get 3.2 triples? It's not going to be. He can't take a huge leap, because when you're already that good, like, how much further do you go?
What if he starts dropping dimes like Steve Nash? I'm just playing fun.
No, look, in the last 27 games of the season, he averaged 8.3 assists. So it's not crazy to think that he could average over 8 assists in a season. And he was playing 40 minutes a night then, true. In his last 2 months, which is the 27 games, he averaged 31 points, 5.7 rebounds, 8.3 assists, 1.9 steals, 3 threes on 46 and 84, shooting 37 from 3. Like, they're ridiculous numbers. And if Steph takes somewhat of a step back, and Durant takes even a marginal step back, then he vaults them, I think. It's real close. And I think that's the best thing in terms of fantasy, is that there's no clear-cut number one. Is that if you end up with pick 2 or pick 3 and you get Harden or Westbrook or Curry or Durant or whoever, or Davis, who's going to fall down to 6 or 7, and there's a chance that he plays a full season and ends up being the number one guy. That could all happen as well. And Towns and Kawhi and Boogie Cousins. Who knows? It feels like it's a lot more open up in that top end of the draft, where getting number one is not going to be the biggest advantage as what it's been previously.
Are there any guys who are kind of outside of the top five who you would consider taking in the top five, whether that's Kawhi, or do you consider him in the top five? Anthony Davis, DeMarcus Cousins. I don't know why that one would go that. Or even thinking about guys like Hassan Whiteside, who improved his free throw percentage in the second half of last season. I don't know if that's real. Karl Anthony Towns, anticipating a jump from him. Or even Giannis, somebody who at the second half of last season was a top 12 player. Do any of those guys creep into your thought process near the end of that, those top five?
You got Curry, Westbrook, Durant, Harden, I think are pretty much the consensus top four at this point. And then I think it gets a little bit cloudier, where you could have Davis at 5, you could have Leonard at 5, you could conceivably take a swing for the fence and take Towns at 5. I would probably have Davis at 5 at this early point without doing anything in terms of projections, but I think that 5 spot gets real interesting, because that's where there is somewhat of a drop-off, but it's not a big drop-off, but I feel there's a consensus 4, and then there's those couple of guys that slide in there. The other guy that's going to be interesting too is, you talk about second half of last year where Giannis was, Victor Oladipo was a top 10 player in the second half of last season, and he's not going to be a top 10 player this year, but he's got a real big opportunity to absorb how many of KD's shots, because who else? Kyle Singler's not taking them. Ersan Ilyasova's not taking them. Oladipo's going to have a real big season, I think. It's very wide open at this point.
No. Yeah, I think Oladipo definitely gets pretty much as many of those possessions as he can handle, but then I think we'll also see a lot of it go to Enes Kanter, potentially, if he's playing more minutes with Serge Ibaka gone and Kevin Durant gone.
Well, if we remember back to when Kanter joined the Thunder, Durant was out, obviously, and him and Westbrook was just a dynamic combination. And he played along with Serge Ibaka. Adams didn't play a huge amount there, but you're combining with Adams this time. Kanter was a top 20 player in that stretch. Now, I don't think he's going to be a top 20 player, but you'll be able to get him pretty late, because people will be like, oh, he doesn't block shots, that's cool. But if he plays 32 minutes, you're going to get 18 and 12 on awesome percentages, and he can start to sort of stretch a little bit out to 3, so he's going to get a significant, and Adams is going to get a bump as well. But Kanter, if we remember back to that time when Durant was out, Kanter was almost unstoppable for that last 2 months of the season. You couldn't keep him off the offensive glass. You couldn't stop him down. Like, it'd take 2-3 guys to stop any of his offensive moves. And him and Westbrook formed a really significant partnership, and fed off each other really, really well. And I think that Kanter's in line for a big season, and people will be like, yeah, I know you can't play him with his defense, but this team's not a championship team anymore. And the other option, who are the other options? Sabonis, Nick Collison. Like, who else is going to play? He's going to have to play.
No, yeah. I mean, you're not going to run Mitch McGarry a bunch of minutes out there. So it's, they're going to have to play Enes Kanter with the roster the way it is right now. Unless they change things, they're going to have to play Enes Kanter quite a few minutes.
They have to. And I put out like a potential starting five yesterday of Westbrook, Oladipo, Robinson, Kanter, Adams, and everyone responded back, they got no shooting. I know that, but they can't just magically find shooting, and they can't find, like, they've got Anthony Morrow, one of the greatest shooters of all time, who's also dreadful in every other aspect of the game, and he couldn't get a single minute last year, basically. So he's not going to come in and go, cool, we found our KD replacement, Anthony Morrow is playing 32 minutes. It's just not going to happen. So yes, they've got no shooting, but they've also got no way to fix it to magically get shooting in a good player. And Kant has got plenty of faults, and he's got plenty of downsides, but he can shoot a little bit. He's not quite the shooter that what Serge Ibaka was, but he's not a guy that can't hit a shot outside the paint. He can stretch it out a little bit. He can hit threes to a smaller degree. And he is going to be a value player because he's got a lot of hate against him. I think he was a top 100 player this season playing 20 minutes a game. You get it to 30 minutes a game, how much higher does he go? And I know all the limitations, but still, he's going to be forced into minutes because there's nobody else. What did he hit on threes? Enes Kanter hit 48% of his three-pointers this season. Probably unsustainable, but that's not bad. He didn't take many. How many did he take? He only took 21 attempts, but he still hit 10 of them.
I think the one thing that worries me about Enes Kanter's value is the fact that Ersan Ilyasova is there.
Yep.
And Ilyasova always finds a way to get enough minutes to ruin somebody else's value.
He's going to play, but he's not going to be able to stick for 30 minutes. Are you still there? No, Kyle's frozen on me. All right, well, I'll keep talking until Kyle returns. Kyle, you back? Nope. He has frozen, so when he comes back, we'll get back into it. But yeah, that's how I see it panning out with Kanter, with Adams. In terms of, Adams gets a bump, no doubt. And he's, me and Matt Smith were debating this the other day, whether he is a top 100 player or not. It is almost without doubt. Now, he's definitely a top 100 player. Now, he won't be playing 25 minutes a game. He'll be playing 30, 31, 32 minutes per game. I'd say that's pretty self-explanatory at this point. Kyle, are you back?
Think so.
You're back. Thanks. All right. There. I was just talking about the bump that Steve Adams is going to get. He played 25 minutes a game last season. Me and Matt were discussing this the other day, Kyle, about is he a top 100 player? And we said he's sort of on that range. You'd probably take him into the top 100. He vaults inside that now.
How many minutes Steven Adams is going to get just because we've never seen him minutes and get big production. Even when he does start to play, he showed off a little bit more passing skills in the playoffs, and I wonder if he's going to continue to expand his game. But when I look at Steven Adams, I want to get rebounds, good blocks out of him, and I'm not convinced that I'm going to even get a block and a half out of Steven Adams right now. If I don't think I'm as high on as you are, just because of the way the NBA is moving. So if he's good and he can have an impact on the game, and I'm actually surprised how impactful he has been, but I worry about his production in C more than I do his production in normal basketball.
He's not going to be a top 50 player. I'm pretty confident in that at this point. And I think he will get overdrafted in a lot of spots. So that means he probably won't end up on any of my teams. I think that he is a top 100 player and should comfortably be probably a top 85-ish sort of guy. But again, it's real early for me to say that. But I do think that he is going to get... I saw an article written yesterday that said he will be one of the first centers off the board, which is just ludicrous to me to think that he would be drafted anywhere in the top 10 or 12 centers that get drafted.
Yeah, it'll be hard for it's going to have to be later in the draft for me to be able to fit him on my teams, just because unless we see going into the season that it is clear that he's going to have a bigger role in Durant and Jeff.
I don't know what's going on with Kyle's, or maybe it's my connection. Something is going on, and Kyle continues to drop out. I will, Kyle, if you are there, can you hear me again? Yeah, you're dropping out. Maybe you should drop out of the show, and then come back in a couple of, and we'll come back in 30 seconds and see if that changes anything. Yep. All right, Kyle's gone. He'll be back in a sec. Okay, so I think that covers. Yeah, our thoughts on this whole Durant thing. I've given my real basketball perspective on it. I've given my fantasy basketball perspective on it. Curry and Durant, they take a hit, but they come back to the pack slightly, but they're not going to be guys that fall outside the top 10 or probably even fall outside the top 5 or 6, I wouldn't have thought. And you might want to take a risk on taking someone over Durant, like Towns, like Leonard, like Davis, like any. Look, Jimmy Butler's another guy who pushes himself potentially into the top 10 with all the shitstorm that's going on in Chicago. Let's move on to the next signing. We'll probably end up touching back on this. Tariq Black signed for 2 years, $12.5 million with the Lakers. I really like Tariq Black, and you hear the reports coming out now, Kyle, that the Lakers management was displeased that Byron Scott refused to play him. I think that should be probably number 100 on the list of things that they should hate Byron Scott for, but it's just another one to add into why did you keep this guy around so long when you had no other center, and this guy who showed a little bit of promise wasn't given any playing time. Tariq Black, their other centers, Timofey Mozgov and Ivica Zubac, the rookie who I do really like a lot. All it gives them is three subpar centers at this point. Mozgov is the prohibitive starter on day one, but you know, I talked about this with Aaron the other day. Do you think that there's a huge chance that Mozgov doesn't finish the season as the starter?
Luke Walton told him to big role there, and Tim, I don't understand the method here as far as Luke going after Timofey Mozgov as a target in free agency so quickly. We saw I don't know what they're thinking with Mozgov. He's an antiquated player to me in several respects. I know that he's better on offense than what we saw out of him in Cleveland, but I don't know if that him being a dominant presence. I really don't understand this signing in many regard, and I wouldn't be surprised if anybody other than Mozgov is starting by the end of the season. It's just it's hard to say what's going to happen with a new coach stepping in with a bunch of with a really weird roster that's shaping up to be right now.
Yeah, it's extraordinarily weird, the roster in LA. And you're right. Who knows? Maybe it's Black that takes over the job. Maybe Mozgov retains it. Maybe it's Zubac who's the guy I'm really excited about to see, and can't wait to see him make his summer league debut in the next couple of days. But Tariq Black, again, a guy that just was starved of opportunities under Byron Scott. The next signing, the Hornets needed a backup point guard desperately after Jeremy Lin left. So Ramon Sessions signed 2 year, $12.5 million with the Hornets. He just slots into that same role that basically he had in Washington, in that if the starter goes down, he's going to start, and you're going to want him on fantasy teams if the starter goes down. But otherwise, he's not going to provide really much at all. I think he's about 30 years old now. He's just filling in the gaps. They didn't have much cap space left to sign a backup point guard, and Ramon Sessions is that guy. He doesn't really move much of a needle, does he, Kyle?
No, I think it was a guy who they were familiar with, who they knew that what they were getting out of him, and he was available at a reasonable price, and that's why Ramon Sessions was signed by the Hornets. I don't think that you're right. He's not going to move the needle for them.
The biggest deal the Ramon Sessions signing is for me, and couple that with Garrett Temple signing with Sacramento, is that Washington's backup guard situation, it comes down to Thomas Satoransky, who I think they've got earmarked for a pretty decent role coming. Look, they didn't pay him a huge amount, but they must have been able to coax him to come over with some sort of promise of a role. They've lost their backup point guard. They've lost their backup two in Temple and Sessions. And Satoransky is a 6'7" guy who plays point and can play the two. And yet Gary Neal is still around, although he might be a free agent as well. I think this means Satoransky gets pretty significant minutes, if not straight away, but they've got no one else. They've got no other guards, and they've got no other backup point guard, so Satoransky's going to have to play there some.
So they did trade for Trey Burke.
No, that's right. They did.
That was Washington that traded for him.
Yeah, it was for a future second round. So I am forgetting. Okay, so they've got Burke and Satoransky. So maybe that cuts a little bit into Satoransky's minutes. But the fact
that you pointed out that Satoransky is 6'7", which gives him, if nothing else, defense at the two guard and even potentially small forward if they want him to. So Satoransky's versatility should help him get on the court sooner than later. And hopefully we just get enough minutes here to have a understanding of what his ceiling might be going forward after this season, because he does have great size for being a guard, you know, a guy who projects to play point guard.
He's also a guy with, you know, crazy athleticism as well. Not, you know, you think of, you know, in the general thought process of people is, you know, white guys, less athleticism, but a lot of these European white guys that are coming across, like Mario Hezonja, like crazy jumpers, like he's a great dunker, great on alley-oops. He averaged 6 assists per 36 minutes over in Europe last season. He shot 53% from the field as a point guard and shot 42% from three. Just great numbers, and they translate pretty well to the NBA. So he's a guy I've been excited to see come over since he was drafted 4 years ago. So really excited to see him get in there. Sergio Rodriguez, talking about European players, he signed a one-year, $8 million contract with the Philadelphia 76ers. He adds to their point guard rotation of TJ McConnell and Jared Bayless. Rodriguez is now 30 years old. It's been a while since we've seen him in the NBA. What do we make of Rodriguez coming across here for this one-year deal? And it seems weird because I think a few months ago he mentioned that he wasn't coming across.
I hope it's with the expectation that he's going to start for Philadelphia. Start, and if he gets enough minutes, should be good assist numbers. I'm not sure he's going to contribute a whole lot elsewhere. But Sergio Rodriguez, I'm just excited to have him back in the NBA because I want to watch him actually play this time instead of sitting on the bench primarily, which he did most of the time. He was in the NBA last time.
His per 36 numbers in Spain, or across all competitions, Spain and EuroLeague, he averaged 17-9. He shot 41% from three. He shot 48% from the field, 83% from the line. If he gets starters minutes, then you have to draft him in fantasy. I don't think you can avoid it because you're going to get decent assist numbers and really good percentages. We'll see what he can do. But if the indication is that he is the starter, then he'll have to be a draftable player.
Well, and I mean, today, if you were projecting who was going to start for the Philadelphia 76ers at point guard, I would say Sergio Rodriguez over Bayless. I would expect them to use Bayless in a combo guard role, predominantly off the bench.
Yep, in that two guard to just you know, sort of like what Isaiah Cannon did last season, go out there and hit threes and handle the ball marginally and play 27 minutes or so. Obviously, their guards are getting a bit stronger. You know, Rodriguez, McConnell, who looked pretty good in summer league, he's, you know, he's 1 year old and he was a pretty decent find for them last year. Bayless, Luau Cabarro as well, who looked pretty handy in his first summer league game, and obviously Ben Simmons. Did you watch any of Simmons' summer league debut against the Celtics?
I didn't watch all of it, but I definitely checked out the highlights. He did shoot 2 of 9 from the floor, that's just me throwing shade. There were some passes that he made that were like, you scream out like a 12-year-old girl when you see him. So, yeah, it's exciting. Okay, I'm probably the biggest Ben Simmons hater there is. I can't wait to watch him just dropping dimes left and right. It's going to be awesome.
Some of those parts, playing with a team that you don't know, the first time that he's played since the last LSU game, and some of the parts, like he had one touch pass, it was just insane. It just got him, he just basically fanned it off to the guy standing under the ring. He was doing bounce, but he was doing everything. And I thought, this guy, like, yeah, the shooting, yeah, we know it's a concern. I think it can get better. The defense, when he's locked in, I'm pretty sure his defense is going to be fine. He looked really exciting, so I'm excited to see what he can do for Philadelphia. And that does, you know, reduce the need for them to have a really top level point guard, because he's going to handle the ball probably 50% of the time, I'd say.
Oh yeah, oh yeah. If they, that's the one fear with Philadelphia adding any veteran players like a Sergio Rodriguez, like a Jared Bayless at ball handling positions, is you don't want the ball out of Ben Simmons' hands. I mean, that's where he's going to have the biggest impact, is in how he sets up his fellow teammates, especially early in his career, because he's still working on his jumper and he's still working on being consistent at finishing at the rack. And that's going to be something he has to learn to play, do finishing at the rack, that is, in the NBA. There's going to be a learning curve there, because it's not as easy as it is in college. So it's interesting. But also, Dario Saric, when he comes over, he's going to have the ability to handle the ball a little bit too. I think taking into account Sergio Rodriguez and Bayless's addition to the team, you're probably going to be docking Ben Simmons' assist numbers a little bit. But they, I mean, if they're smart, and Brett Brown, I don't know, man. You when you're watching him, it's hard not to get excited, even though it's summer league, because I mean, the kid was going down the right side of the lane. He turned his body. It looked like he was going to try to make a really hard layup, and then dished it behind his head to a guy that was – there was two defenders. He was in between two defenders. There's insane passes that he's making, like, and the good point that you made, that he's playing with guys he's never played with before, and he's making these great passes to them. So it's exciting.
Absolutely. I can't wait. Now, before we get on to the next one, Kyle, just a quick word from the sponsor of this podcast, which is Fantrax. Now, Fantrax, if you aren't aware, it is the best place to go and host your fantasy league, whether that be basketball or football or hockey or baseball or college football or college basketball. Fantrax allows you to do everything you've ever dreamed of with a fantasy league. The best free options, the best premium options. You can do multi-team trades, which is something that plenty of people would have been hankering for, to get three teams involved in a trade without, you know, you do this and then we'll wait for that to process and then we'll do another trade and none of that sort of stuff. You can have trading future draft choices, which if you're doing that on one of the other providers, ESPN or Yahoo, you need to, you know, have a separate Google Doc to keep track of all this, and with notes written down who's traded who, who's got whose 2020 draft choice. And Fantrax handles it all for you. You can put contracts in, real salaries, fake salaries, however you want to do it, keeper inflation, all that sort of stuff. You know, preset draft orders, change the draft order for each round, however you see fit, depending on, you know, the structure of your league. Fantrax does all that. And when you go over to Fantrax and decide to take your league over, which you should, when you sign up for a Fantrax account, use the promo code REDROCK. That puts you into the draw to win $100 of Fantrax cash, which enables you to get yourself a premium league as well over there. Kyle, you've been on Fantrax before. You're going to be in leagues with me again here this season. And they've got a lot of options, don't they?
It's a great service. It's one of the cool things to me is that every single time I think of something where I contact the commissioners who are running my leagues and I say, hey, is there this option on there? Yeah, it's on there. You know, and including when I play in playoff fantasy basketball leagues, it's on Fantrax, because yeah, I don't know of anywhere else to do it. But the last few seasons, I've always played in playoff leagues, which it's different. It's because you're trying to manage the number of games that you expect players to get based on how far they make it in the playoffs. Fantrax can accommodate pretty much any kind of league that you want to build. So yeah, dude, it's, I mean, you're asking me off the cuff, and I'm just letting listeners know that Fantrax is a great site. It's easy on the eyes, it's simple to use. And there's a lot of options. If the more you dig into it and the more you want to take out of it, the more you can.
There's so much. And yeah, I should have given you a warning. I was going to ask you that question, but I knew that you'd played on there and I knew you'd done those playoff stuff on there as well. There's just so much that you can do. And just sign up. It's free to sign up and check out the options. And when you do, I can guarantee you that you won't be disappointed. Let's talk Harrison Barnes. And I think me and Aaron spoke about Harrison the other day, but now it's official. He will be joining the Dallas Mavericks. 4 years, $94 million. There is going to be an incessant amount of jokes about Harrison Barnes is the worst max player of all time. Harrison Barnes is terrible. Harrison Barnes is trash. He's not that bad. He's not great, but I don't care about max contract designations. It's what it takes to get a player at this point. And we heard those comments about when Mike Conley first signed his contract, when Kemba Walker signed his contract, when Gordon Hayward and Chandler Parsons signed their max contracts 2-3 years ago, whenever it was. And you don't hear anyone whinging about Gordon Hayward being a max contract player. which he was back in the day, because he developed into it. Now, maybe Barnes can, maybe he can't. I think that he's obviously going to see somewhat of an uptick in production in Dallas. Is it enough to make him a player that has to be drafted?
I just think in today's NBA, getting paid $94 million isn't, like, that's not, he doesn't have to be the number one option on your team. No. So we're going to see the cap go up again next year. It's you pointed out Gordon Hayward, and that's a good one, because when he signed that offer sheet with Charlotte, everybody was like, holy crap, you know, 15, 16 million a year or whatever it is that Gordon Hayward was getting. Everybody thought it was insane. The narrative moves along as we go, you know. It's
very quickly.
We need to stop being surprised by how much these guys are making. There's only 15 guys on the roster, and that's not even true on every team.
Yeah, no, exactly. By next summer, Harrison Barnes will be fine, and he'll be a player that he'll be draftable. He's definitely got top 100 potential. He shot really good percentages across the last two seasons, a 39% shooter from three. He's got an opportunity to hit two threes a game, to grab seven or so rebounds a game, to score 15, 16 points. Yeah, Chandler Parsons was really productive on Dallas, and Barnes is basically stepping straight into his role. He's not the same passer that Parsons is, but he's going to be getting his role in the offense to a degree and getting his shots. And he's heading across with his best mate, Andrew Bogut, and Bogut's confident that Barnes could be a player that averages 20 a game. Now, he might not do that with Dirk around, but he should be their second leading scorer next season, I would say. Yeah, if not, ahead of Dirk, depending on how they run it.
Considering what their roster looks like right now, yeah, I think it would be, you have to expect Harrison Barnes to be at least the number two scorer on that team. And there were times in the past few years too where Mark Jackson used to let Harrison Barnes bring the ball up the court because he was trying to teach him how to be a guy who could handle the ball a little bit and do a little bit more with it. Maybe now that Harrison Barnes is on a team where he's going to be asked to do more and there's going to be higher expectations for him, we'll start to see him get more comfortable in an expanded role in the NBA. He's a bit of a stiff player to me. I'm afraid that he's just going to end up being another Jeff Green, at least as far as his production goes. But he's at least going to probably be more efficient than what we've seen Jeff Green be. So maybe less warts than what you'd see on a Jeff Green.
Yeah, look, and he has his downsides. He doesn't block shots. He doesn't really get assists. But I think that stuff, maybe not the blocks, but I think the assists can start to grow this season as he does work into a more high-profile role. It's going to be really interesting to see, but I'm definitely not out on him. There are people who have tweeted me, will he be the only max contract player that's undraftable in fantasy? And I think that's so far off the mark that he will. And if you're not drafting, I would happily snatch him up in the last round and get a real bargain, I'm pretty sure. Pau Gasol.
It's concerning looking at his defensive stats and not seeing a whole number. Yep. So that scares me a little bit away from Harrison Barnes, because you're relying on him, a lot of his value to come from efficient shooting, hopefully hitting more three-pointers, hopefully getting – I mean, is he going to get 36 minutes a night, which is going to allow him to get six or seven rebounds a night? And also potentially up to three assists and hopefully a whole steal, not just 0.6 steals per game like he had last year.
Yeah, and I think that there is a possibility he gets to a steal a game. I think that is within him. The blocks, probably not, but I think that he can get – well, he's averaged – prior to last season, he averaged 0.9, 1.1 and 0.9 per 36 minutes. He might not get to 36 minutes, but – with the roster, you'd think he's going to get 33 to 34 minutes, and Carlisle hasn't been shy about playing the better players a lot of minutes. And we saw that once Parsons was fine from his knee, that he started playing a lot of minutes down the stretch. And that could be they do have Justin Anderson there behind him, who showed a lot of flashes of really good play throughout the end of the season. But Barnes is in for a pretty good season, and it happens a lot, and this is something that I probably should study more. But players who suffer severe ankle injuries, like Barnes did last season, when they come back that season, they are always significantly worse than what they were and what they will be in the next season. We saw it happen with Jimmy Butler before his massive breakout. We saw it happen with Rubio. There was another player, and I can't remember who the other guy was, in the last two or three seasons that have suffered severe ankle injuries that keep them out for 3, 4, 5 weeks at a time. And then they come back and they just are nowhere near the same. And then the next season, through the roof, everything goes back to normal and better. And Barnes suffered a significant ankle sprain. He was never right from that. I don't care what you say. If anyone's had a severe ankle sprain, that lasts with you for years. And that might sound hyperbolic, but if you suffer a big one where ligaments are literally ripping off, then you are not right in 4 weeks. And the time off that he's not that he's got much time off because he's playing for Team USA, but the couple of months he has off, I think will do him wonders. And I think we see a really somewhat breakout from Barnes. I'm excited to see it. Pau Gasol joining the Spurs, Kyle, 2 years, $30 million. This seems to indicate that Tim Duncan won't be back. We don't have official word on that yet, but Powell had been a really impressive fantasy player for the last two seasons in Chicago. Not quite as effective in his real-life performance. Him joining San Antonio, his advanced age, it's going to be tough for him to maintain top 30 status, isn't it?
Yeah, it's definitely going to be hard for Pau Gasol to continue to be the great player that he's been the last couple of years, but it's I don't want to discount him yet, especially if Tim Duncan's gone, you got David West gone, they just traded Boris Diaw. There are a lot of guys missing from that front court this season, and there might just be enough minutes for Pau Gasol to put up a similar year to what he put up last season. He played 32 minutes for Chicago last year, and I know that you mentioned it may not have been as good basketball-wise for the NBA, for the Chicago Bulls, but the guy averaged almost 17 points, 11 rebounds, 4 assists, 2 blocks a game, and he was shooting 47% from the field, 35% from 3. There's just a lot to like about Pau Gasol, and if you got several guys missing from that front court, I think it's possible that he gets close to that 32 minutes or at least has similar production to what he had in Chicago.
He was the 20th ranked player last season, 15th the year before that. You are not going to have to take him anywhere near that. I, in fact, think that he will probably slide to outside the top 50 in drafts, and then I reckon he becomes a pretty significant bargain at that point, because I reckon he's probably got one more year left of being able to play 30-plus minutes, and he'll still produce and still be a liability on the court. But we need to see exactly what happens with Duncan. But you're right about Boris Diaw. That's opened up the 15 or 17 minutes that Diaw played last season. That opens up some playing time for Gasol. And it's just going to be really interesting to see how, again, he meshes in with this new team and how he looks fantasy-wise. But he is going to be a player who does slide significantly down draft boards. And you probably, I don't think that you'll have to take him inside the top 50, and that could return some pretty good value for him, given he was still really productive. 16.5 and 11 with 2 blocks a game. That's still really good. He didn't really show signs of declining in terms of production-wise either. Brandon Jennings, 1 year, $5 million with the New York Knicks. He'll be backing up Derrick Rose, so there's obviously going to be opportunities for him to play games there. I don't think there's really any chance that he unseats Rose as the starting point guard. Could you see that happening?
Sorry, you lost me there for a second.
Cool.
Brandon Jennings, it's a matter of whether or not he's healthy. Is he going to... And then is Derrick Rose healthy? Because we know the potential for Derrick Rose to miss time due to injury. If that happens, there could be room for Jennings to find value next season, but unless Derrick Rose gets hurt, there's not going to be value for Brandon Jennings in New York. I just don't see them turning to Brandon Jennings and pushing Rose to the bench at any point, regardless of how well Brandon Jennings might play. And in the time that Jennings played with Orlando last year, which is when he wasn't shooting that well. He was shooting under, I think he was shooting 37, 38, which isn't too far off of what he usually does, which is right around 40%. it's an interesting signing. I think it's good for New York for them to try to insulate themselves from a Derrick Rose injury. But fantasy-wise, it's going to take a unique situation for Brandon Jennings to find good value, because even if Derrick Rose goes down, you still got Carmelo and Kristaps demanding shots.
Yeah, look, if Rose goes down and Jennings comes in and plays 30 minutes, you'd pick him up on a flyer, but there's no real value in here. And look, Achilles injuries for players who rely on speed and athleticism, it's pretty much over for those sort of players. And you know, Jennings had struggles at the best of times, and whether he can bounce back ever is a real concern. And yeah, that's fine. He's got a 1 year, $5 million deal. Maybe he shows he's healthy, but he definitely didn't show that last season. Luke Marmute, I touched on it earlier, 2 years, $4.5 million with the Clippers. He just goes back. He will battle Wes Johnson for that starting small forward job. He offers zero fantasy value unless you're in a 30-team deep league. He offers nothing, basically. But it does cut into the ability for Wes Johnson to play 30 minutes. We're working on a huge delay here. No, Kyle's gone again. This good old Australian internet really, really striking a chord with me here. All right, let's move on to the next one. Zaza Pachulia is the next one. When Kyle's back, he's back. He signed a one-year, $2.9 million contract with the Golden State Warriors, and he slots straight in as their starting center. He was tremendous in Dallas to start the season until Rick Carlisle decided, we're not playing you ever again. Kyle, you're back. We're just talking Zaza Pachulia, who signed a one-year, $2.9 million contract with the Warriors. He slots in as the starting center, and yes, Draymond Green will play some center for this team, but he can't play the whole game as a center. There is no other centers on this team unless you're including Damian Jones, who is the 30th pick in the draft, or unless you're going to put James Michael McAdoo in as a fill-in center. Pachulia is going to get the bulk of the minutes, and we saw that even in minutes less than 30 in Dallas last season, he was a fantasy asset. He's probably not going to be a great top 100 target, but in your deeper 14s or 16 team leagues, he'll be useful because he's going to have to get minutes at center.
Yeah, I would think that Golden State might be able to use David West at center as well if they want to.
That's true.
I'm still curious as to, have you seen specifically, did they say Zaza is going to start at center? I mean, we haven't actually heard that, right?
No.
That's kind of the presumption.
Yeah,
I haven't heard that.
Yeah, no, I haven't heard that either. But I look, maybe they start West, but West isn't that big in himself. What is he, 6'9"?
Well, I just think that they might start the death lineup.
Okay.
You know, start Draymond at center, start Durant at power forward, start Iguodala at small forward, and then use the bigger lineups as they necessitate. Now, realistically, the way they've done it in the last few years is to just use that bigger lineup to start the game, because that's what every other team does too. You know, when you've got Toronto starting Jonas Valanciunas, well, okay, yeah, we're going to start Zaza Pachulia. Should they potentially try to mix it up from game to game? Or do you like them kind of setting their starting lineup, going with that same every game, and just having a good rotation that they follow every single game?
No, I've got no issue with mixing it up. I don't think it's something that Kerr likes to do, though. He had a really set rotation of when players come in and when players come out. I don't think that's something that he would look to do. He might make a change occasionally, but I think that he would be pretty much, let's make others adjust to what we do rather than adjust versus what the opposition's doing. He's pretty stubbornly set in what he does with his rotations, or we saw that throughout last season, and I don't think he'll be changing the starting lineup from day to day.
If your small lineup, if your death lineup is the one that really turns other teams on their head, if it's the lineup that makes other teams panic and throw out lineups that they're not used to, wouldn't it kind of be smart in some ways to just use that from jump street and turn teams around right in the first quarter? You know, get right into their head and be like, look, you don't stand a chance against us. We just dropped 20 points on your 3 points. And that's the way a lot of games are going to start, because we're starting our best five players. I feel like Zaza, David West, like, I don't, you know, just a fan in me, here's the thing. I know they're going to start Zaza. That's the likelihood. The fan in me really wants them to start Draymond at center.
I agree with you. I think that getting – and this is the – not the opposite. It's the other side of what I've been really negative against throughout the season, of starting these placeholder starters like Noah Vonleh and crap like that who go out there and play 10 minutes at the start of the game. Get your opponent on the back foot. Play your best lineups. Get it happening straight away. Don't play these guys that don't play Keith Bogans as your starting shooting guard and have this negative there where you end up getting on the back foot and then you're fighting to recover the whole way. Not that the Warriors would necessarily need to recover from playing Zaza as a starter, but play your best lineup to start the game and smack your opponent in the mouth. Make them fall down and then make them scramble to get back up. Don't. And this goes to every team. No point playing a guy out there, we're going to start him and then he's going to play 5 minutes and he's not going to come back in until the start of the second half where he plays 5 minutes. What is the point of that? Let's get off to as bad a start as we possibly can, then put our good players in. It makes no sense.
For looking for what you think is going to happen with Golden State, can you tell us exactly what you think is going to happen regarding the players they have now and how you think the rotation's gonna fill out? I know you already touched a little bit on that. Klay might lose, probably be the biggest loser out of the top four guys on Golden State, but straight out, you think Zaza starts at center for them?
I think that's how they'll do it. I do. He'll probably end up getting 25 minutes a night as an early guess, similar to what Bogut got, but remember there's no Azili now there as well. So Damian Jones will have to work his way into the rotation somewhat. Who knows if they bring back Varejao, they probably shouldn't. McAdoo played some minutes at center in the finals and looked decent. Maybe they give him some extra playing time there as well. I do think that Klay loses some of his, I think they all have to lose a couple of their touches, but Klay loses the majority of them. Obviously, Barnes is gone. Pachulia doesn't do much. He'll pass. He's a really good passer as a center. He's a relatively good defender. He's an adequate rim protector. He's a good offensive player without being a good shooter. I think that he fits in it perfectly in terms of he won't need the ball at all. He just can go out there and set screens and grab rebounds and facilitate, much like Bogut did, facilitate from the post, get it into him, he can pass it back out. Not that they lack for good passes, but he sort of fits in with a ball-moving type of center that they need.
Yeah, Zaza Pachulia can do everything adequately. He's not going to hurt you. He's going to be a glue guy, and he's going to be able to do what is necessary. He's going to make the right play, probably more than anything. I don't know that – I think he's a competent passer, and I think he's better than average for a center who's a passer. But I really just think the guy makes the right play all the time. He doesn't try to force things.
Yeah, and he's apparently a really good bloke who just fit in with everything that needs to be done. I think it's as good a signing as you could get for $3 million and fits in exactly what they need to do. And I do think they start him. He won't play full starters minutes, but I completely understand your thought process, because it's been something that I've been saying all season. Just play your best guys and just headbutt your opponent from the start and go deal with it, and then get back in, then try and get back into the game from there. And that's the way that I would be approaching it. Roy Hibbert signed a 1-year, $5 million contract with the Charlotte Hornets to be their backup center. He takes up the Al Jefferson role. Obviously, the offense is not quite the same as Jefferson, but the defense is 5, 6, 10 times better, and Hibbert has not been a great defender. He will not factor into fantasy leagues, really. This is Hibbert's best role, though, just being a backup big man who comes in and protects the rim for 17 minutes a night. You don't think he starts over Zeller, do you?
No, I don't think that. Oh, man. I don't know, because Steve Clifford might be one of those coaches who actually can get the best out of Hibbert. Because we know that true. When he plays at his best, he can be a dominant defensive center. And if that's – Steve Clifford is the kind of coach who could get him to play well. It's possible that we see Hibbert play, 20 game. But I think that's his cap. And even in that time, I think if you're looking at Roy Hibbert and you're looking at asking what the Charlotte Hornets expect from him, what they're hoping to have is similar to what you were talking about, the bench who can come in and make a defensive impact, and not in the same maybe exciting way, but the way that Biombo came out for the Raptors in the playoffs this year and was a rim protector in whatever minutes he was playing, and he was dominant. And I think that's what they'll be hoping they can get Roy Hibbert to be. But he's a guy who motivation or I just no, I don't see it happening. It's Roy Hibbert. He's kind of been done for a while.
Terrible rebounder, but what he does do, and I think this helps Charlotte as well, is he enables the players with him to rebound at a much better rate. And when you've got guys like Michael Kidd-Gilchrist, who could ostensibly be playing the four in some lineups, playing with Hibbert enables him to get even more aggressive on the glass and grab more of those rebounds. And even Batum grabbing more of those boards as well. And Kaminsky being a bit more active down there, because Hibbert just can lock up guys and box out and keep them off the boards without actually grabbing any himself. And that will help those lineups where, say, Kidd-Gilchrist is forced to the floor and let him actually play as a guy who can control the glass. He's a really good rebounder as it is, but playing with Hibbert, I think that helps him a lot in that sort of situation. Lance Thomas went back to the Knicks, a four-year, $27 million contract. I know that you were a massive Lance Thomas fan when he was with the Oklahoma City Thunder, Kyle. So what do you make of the fact that he is now signed on for 4 years?
I mean, Thomas is on the Knicks, right? I mean, that so unless we have Carmelo Anthony injuries like last season, it's hard to see a big role for him. But he played really well in what minutes he played last year, and he seems to have developed. Even though he's an older young player in the NBA, he's definitely continued to improve each year. So we'll see where that goes. I apologize if you made a joke about Lance Thomas. You're breaking up on me and I couldn't hear it initially, but I saw your big smiling face and I just wanted to acknowledge that.
My joke was that you were a huge fan of his back when he was a member of the Oklahoma City Thunder, when he used to fill in for Durant's injury. You were huge on him. I think what did you used to say, that he was a player that wouldn't get any run down at the YMCA?
Well, he came the one Oklahoma City game in Milwaukee that year. They were starting Reggie Jackson and Lance Thomas because there was no Westbrook and there was no Durant at that time. It was brutal, dude. Lance Thomas was getting possession after possession in that game, and you were wondering what the hell you got in the car and drove to the arena for.
This is a baffling contract to me. Seth Curry, 2 years, $6 million with the Mavericks. Baffling in that I thought for sure he could have got more money than that. Surely the Sixers would have been willing to pay more than that for Seth. He showed that he could maybe not be an upper echelon starter, but be a guy who can definitely earn more than $3 million a year after his play in Sacramento last season. He falls in now as a backup guard in Dallas. Devin Harris is still there. Ray Felton's an unrestricted guy, so maybe he falls into that Ray Felton role. But could you see is Seth playing a bit of the two and back up one as well?
Absolutely. If he's going to shoot as well as he shot last year with Sacramento, hopefully he just actually gets an opportunity to play this year with Dallas early in the season. We didn't get to see him in Sacramento until late in the season when George Karl was finally just putting whoever was a... that was a weird situation. I don't know if guys were actually hurt or not. I don't think they were. I think they were just kind of sitting out games, whether that was Rondo or DeMarcus near the end of the season. So Seth Curry, I'm with you, dude. I thought he was going to get at least $5 million from somebody for a few years to come in and try to prove it, because when you're shooting 45% from three, you deserve a long look.
Yeah, and he took over 110 attempts. I think he took 111 attempts from I would have preferred the Bulls to have signed Seth Curry than Rajon Rondo, to be honest. But even the Bulls should have been looking at paying him $5 million a year to be the backup point guard, because we've got Jerry and Grant and Jose Calderon, but look, just stretch Calderon, get rid of him. Don't sign Rondo, bring Curry in. I would have been much happier with that sort of deal. And to me, that is we can give shit to Dallas and Mark Cuban about free agent misses, but that is one of the steals of this entire free agency period, is getting Seth Curry for $6 million for 2 years is highway robbery. Move on to the next one, and that's Dirk. 2 years, $40 million. Dirk sacrificed a lot of money to lure free agents here. Didn't work, so he's getting paid for the last 2 years of his career, $20 million a pop. Dirk is probably just going to remain Dirk. He's just going to be that mid-range, mid-round, reliable player who we thought may have dropped off last season. I will not underestimate him again. He will just continue to be Dirk, and he'll continue to be the focal point of this team and basically of the entire Dallas sports community.
Yeah, Dirk's Dirk. He's there for as long as he wants to be there. I believe there was even a report that said that Dallas essentially said to Dirk, you get however much of this remaining cap that you want. And then he took the 2 year, $20 million a year deal. So if he didn't fall off last year, I'm not going to bank on him falling off yet this year, even though he is 38 years old. So it will have to come at some point. And the thing is about Dirk, he has fallen off a little bit with his overall field goal percentage, but he's also been shooting more three-pointers, so it's kind of a good give and take there.
Yeah, definitely. I think he shot 45% last season, but miraculously last season he increased his steals and he increased his block numbers, which is tremendous at that sort of age, and still averaged 18 points and almost hit two threes a game. He's at 1.7 per game. So he's just going to be that guy in those mid-rounds. You won't have to pick him. You finish 51st, you won't have to pick him there. You grab him at 70s, 60s, that sort of range, and he gives you back that same sort of value and, getting that sort of scoring, elite free throw percentage, decent rebounding. It's pretty useful, and Dirk's just hopefully going to continue to be Dirk. Couple more signings to go. Gerald Henderson signed a 2-year, $18 million contract with the Philadelphia 76ers. Just another guard. We know they were lacking with guards. Ish Smith's gone. Isaiah Cannon will be gone as well. Henderson, he's not my favorite player. He can't shoot from distance. He's a decent defender. He's pretty good in terms of dunks and highlights. How does he fit in with Philadelphia at this point? Do you think that they automatically install him as the starting two?
Unfortunately, I do think Gerald Henderson's going to come away with the starting two guard job, unless it's still the same coach. It's still Brett Brown with Philadelphia, but it is a new regime there in the front office. It's a new mindset with bringing in legitimate veterans who I believe they plan on having play, considerable roles. So Gerald Henderson, fantasy-wise, he's not going to help pretty much anybody except in deeper leagues.
Yep.
He's a shooting guard who doesn't shoot threes for the most part. It's frustrating. And unfortunately, he's probably just going to end up limiting the value of guys like Timothy Luawe and also Nick Stauskas and also Hollis Thompson. Not saying that those guys are world beaters or that they have that much upside, but Gerald Henderson, we know what he is, and it's not exciting. I don't have anything else to share on Gerald Henderson.
Yeah, it doesn't fit in any sort of rebuilding time. He's 28 years old. You give him 2 years. Yeah, look, he's probably an upgrade over Stauskas, but I would have liked to have seen what Stauskas could do for one more season and see what he could do with a little bit more talent around him. I would have liked to have seen Luawu been able to get some of those minutes as well. But hey, this is the Colangelo's. Let's see exactly what they do with Henderson. But at this point, I agree with you. I think he's got the inside track to be the starting two. David West, we touched on already. He's gone from taking an $11 million pay cut to go to San Antonio to basically doing the same thing again, signing a one-year, $1.5 million contract with the Golden State Warriors. He will be in the mix for center minutes. He'll play backup four as well alongside McAdoo, who we touched on before. And he'll just be that similar sort of guy I think we saw in San Antonio, who plays 20 minutes a night, I would guess.
Yep. Agree on all that. We're not going to see big minutes out of David West, but he'll come in, he'll be productive, and probably a bigger role than what he had on the Spurs potentially, but we'll see. It depends on what they do with that front court rotation.
Now, this next one, which is the last, let's talk Andrew Bogut trade heading to Dallas. He's going to be their starting center. unless they're not going with Salah Mejri, that they'll take Bogut as their starting center. Now, if Bogut can get 27 minutes a night, then he is a legit top 100 fantasy guy. But at this point, we have to doubt whether his body can handle any of those sort of minutes. How do you view him? Is he a guy that you grab in the late rounds and hope that maybe he can play more minutes and it was just the Warriors being cautious or we don't need you, whereas Dallas actually does need him?
If I need blocks at the end of a draft, 12-team draft, you know, it's near like pick 130, and I need blocks near the end of my draft, I will look toward Andrew Bogut if we hear that he's going to play a significant enough role. But we saw Carlisle change his rotation a lot last season, and that's going to he didn't have a Bogut on his roster, but Zaza Pachulia was playing well, and Zaza still got squeezed for minutes at times. So now I feel bad about comparing Andrew Bogut to the guys that Dallas had last season because he's better than them. If Andrew Bogut's playing 27 minutes a game, yeah, he's going to be rosterable in standard leagues. I don't know if I'm going to go after him just because I worry about his injuries, his injury history, and his potential to get injured again.
Yeah, that's the only thing that should, because you know, if he was to get 30 minutes, which seems almost impossible, then he's a guy that you look at in the top 70 just because he can get big chunk of assists, high field goal percentage, big rebounds, good blocks. He can do some decency. He played 20 minutes a game last year and got 1.6 blocks and shot 63% from the field and grabbed 7 rebounds in 20 minutes. Like, you go to 30, his per 36 numbers is 12 rebounds, 2.8 blocks, and there he was a top 50 per 36 fantasy value. But he's just not going to be able to get anywhere near that sort of playing time. And yeah, the Mavericks don't have the ability to go death lineup and put Draymond Green there. They'll put Salah Mejri there. Well, yeah, they don't have the other option. So you would expect him to squeeze more than 20 minutes per game out of himself. But would that push him then, and he plays only 50 games or 60 games? That's the concern with Bogut. But he'll be a guy I think that will be on and off rosters throughout the season. Hey, look, Bogut's playing. He's getting 27 minutes. Let's grab him. And then when the wheels fall off, then you move on and grab someone else. I think that's probably the best way to view him at this early stage. Talked about Seth Curry's contract. Go ahead.
I think we'll all have Andrew Bogut on a roster at some point next year.
Yep.
Because he will have more value than what he's had in several years.
No, definitely. This is shaping up to be his best fantasy production year in the last two or three, I'd say. We talked about Seth Curry's deal, Kyle, where he got 2 years, $6 million with the Dallas Mavericks. The last guy I'm going to talk about here also got a 2-year, $6 million contract, and this just highlights to me how ludicrous the Curry contract is. Mindaugas Kuzminskas. Now, I'll be honest, I'd never heard of this guy before. Had you ever heard of him?
No, I thought I reread the tweet several times to make sure that I was reading a tweet about the NBA and not, a European team or something like that.
So I had no idea. I had to do a bit of research on him. But he got the same contract as Seth Curry, and he signed with the Knicks, and that is just, it is ridiculous to me. The Knicks would have been better off signing Curry instead of a 1 year, $5 million for Brandon Jennings. Get Curry to be your back. At least you've got some future, and maybe this guy grows into a starting point guard. But instead, Phil Jackson pulls this Kuzminskas guy. He's a Lithuanian. He's 6'9", so he plays a three, plays a little bit of four. He played in the Spanish league last season for Unicaja Malaga. He averaged 11 points across all competitions. He played just 20 minutes a game, 3 rebounds. He got 0.6 steals, 0.4 blocks. He shot 48% from the field. He shot 34% from three, making over one a game. So he's like a stretchy four, a three. Nothing overly special about him. I don't really know where he fits in. Probably a 10, 12 minute a game guy behind Lance Thomas as the third three and behind Kristaps at the four. I don't really know what to say about this.
I'm pretty sure Phil Jackson was just on the Real GM forums, and this player was on there posting about how much he liked the triangle. So that's probably the reason why he got signed.
Yeah, that's probably accurate. Did have a good true shooting of 59%, but really, when he's getting $6 million, Seth Curry's getting... he got $3 million a year. Curry got $3 million a year, and Satoransky got $3 million a year. There's one player there. Two of them are underpaid, and one of them, like, hey, maybe he ends up being underpaid, but it feels like that Satoransky and Curry should have been able to get a lot more money than that, given their play, their reputation, and the fact that people had heard their names before. we are done with the free agency recap. We're still waiting on Dwayne Wade.
Well, hey, what about Willie Hernangómez signing with the Knicks though? About that one?
Has he signed? I knew that he was going to sign. I didn't know that he had signed. I like Willie.
Yeah, I believe he signed today. The details I don't think were released, but there was a report that he had agreed to a deal with the Knicks.
Okay, I do like Willie Hernangómez. He played with Kristaps Porzingis in Spain when Kristaps was there, so he was his teammate there. He was a second-round draft choice at the Philadelphia 76ers 2 years ago, then was traded to the Knicks. He played for Real Madrid last season, I think, if that's correct. I'm just going to bring it up. I think he moved teams from Sevilla, where he was playing with Kristaps, moved to Real Madrid. Didn't play a huge amount with Madrid. He played just 11 minutes a game, and didn't. Only started four contests, so not a great amount to go on. But I think that he's a capable backup center. They do have still Kyle O'Quinn there behind Joakim Noah, so he'll come in as a third center. Maybe they push O'Quinn to the four and play him more at the four. But Hernangómez will get some playing time. I think he's a solid backup center in the league.
Cool. What if Hernangómez was given minutes because Joakim Noah suffered an injury? What kind of stats would he give us?
Well, I'm just having a look at what he averaged last season. It's hard to know because he played so little. He averaged 5 points in 10 minutes. So, you could think that he could give you he could give you 12 and 7 if he had to get 30 minutes a game. He could give you a block and a half maybe. And he shot 66% last season. He's not a stretch threat. He's not a great free throw shooter. He's not a terrible one. He's a pretty decent offensive rebounder, though, so that's something that's going in his direction. And he'd be a Robin Lopez-y type of fantasy player if he was forced into those sort of minutes.
Okay, so now we've got Willie Hernangómez, who's kind of Robin Lopez-ish, and then his younger brother is Juan Hernangómez, who is going to play on the Denver Nuggets this year, correct?
Correct, yep.
Okay, and he's more of a stretch...
He's a
kind
really,
of a hybrid power forward, small forward, right?
Yeah, he's a much different player. He's smaller. He's a 3-point shooting power forward. So this is not an apt comparison, but he's Dirk Nowitzki-ish sort of. So a four who is a perimeter four, basically, but he's probably more stretchy than Dirk. So he hits out and goes out and hits his threes. Similar, Kristaps-y sort of as well, but not as good of a defender, not as big, not much of a rim protector. He could actually probably play the three at a stretch, but much different to Willie.
I just wanted to make sure that we made that distinction for listeners in case they were like, how the hell do we have two Hernangómezes in the league all of a sudden?
Yep, and they are completely, completely different players as well. So, big, big differences. I think Juan has probably got more of an upside, more of a future. I think if you looked at Kevin Pelton's draft projections, he came out in the top 10 or top 7 maybe of players from this class who he thought could be legit players. And he had a stack of internationals in that group, which is probably the way that I view this draft class as well. I think the international group was really strong, and a lot of those guys got underdrafted. So interesting to see these Hernangómez brothers hit the NBA and hopefully take it by storm. Anything else I've missed?
Holla.
Have I missed anything else while we've been recording? No signings going down? The Nuggets have offered a 2-year, $50 million contract to Dwayne Wade. So who knows?
Yeah, I saw that. So Dwayne Wade, though, I mean, the only place he would go is Cleveland, but I don't know how they clear the money for him, right?
Unless LeBron just says, I'm taking $10 million, or who knows? I feel like that Wade does this every season, and he just end up back in Miami. And every season it goes, oh, no, this doesn't feel like the one before. Wade's generally disappointed. And then he just goes back. When he leaves, I'll believe it. But every report that comes out makes it go, this is legit. This is not just posturing, but I still think it's posturing.
I thought it would have been interesting if he went and played in Milwaukee, because Milwaukee would give him a good chance to win going forward at least, or to play on a team that was going to be playing for something meaningful going forward. Also, in order to clear the cap space to sign Dwayne Wade, they probably would have had to offload Greg Monroe onto somebody. Now, we've already heard, though, that the meeting between Dwayne Wade and Milwaukee and the Bucks that was scheduled for Wednesday, that's been canceled, so that's not going to happen. And the Denver Nuggets thing, the $50 million 2-year contract offer that's out there, it's cool, it's fun to see the Denver Nuggets making a good effort to try and sign Dwayne Wade, but why the hell would Dwayne Wade go to the Denver Nuggets?
Well, my counterpoint to that is that aside from the Nuggets just trying to get respectability in their local market and to get excitement amongst the fans and to get an eighth seed, why would they do? They've got about four shooting guards, like Gary Harris, Will Barton, and they just drafted two in Jamal Murray and Malik Beasley, and you're going to add Dwayne Wade in there for 2 years as well. You've got so many young shooting guards who could all look. Gary Harris could legit be a really good starter. Yeah, Murray's got really star potential to me. Beasley's a decent shooter. Will Barton had his moments last season. And then you're adding Wade into the mix. It just feels like an ownership-based move, like, get me a name. I want seats. I want more media coverage. I want more local recognition, because from what I understand, that Denver is just legit Broncos all the time.
It's tough to compete with NFL in certain cities, but there aren't any big names on the Denver Nuggets, you know? They got rid of Carmelo Anthony, and since then, they've been selling Ty Lawson, who turned out to be a multi-drunk driving offender who just kind of burned out in the town and kind of wore out his welcome in some respects, which is sad because he was good there for quite a few years. And then Danilo Gallinari, who struggled with injuries and struggled with bad surgeries. Like, there's been no players for the fans to rally around. Every single player who kind of steps into the limelight for the Denver Nuggets ends up falling into some kind of pit. It even happened to Kenneth Faried, this guy who was kind of a fan favorite. And then when he got thrust this big role upon himself, he couldn't live up to it. And that's kind of been the story there with all the Nuggets who kind of rise to that primary player position or the first option for them. They seem to fall off a cliff fairly shortly after rising to the peak.
Yep, I agree with all that, Kyle. I think we're done here unless something breaks in the next 5 seconds. This will be the last podcast I do for a couple of days at least. I'll be traveling all day tomorrow and then getting myself settled in Vegas. And I think that the podcast will be more sporadic over there because I'll be at Summer League all day. I'll still do probably one or two shows from over there, then have a little bit of a holiday, then back in business towards the middle to end of July as well. Kyle, thank you for coming on.
Hey, thanks for having me on, Josh. I love you, man.
Thanks, mate. You can follow Kyle on Twitter at RotoKyleNBA. You can follow me on Twitter at RedRock_Bball. Check out Fantrax. Of course, we are both part of Basketball Monster, so you know about Basketball Monster. Make sure you're checking that site out as well. We're looking to have it open for next season by the start of September. That's the goal date at this point for projections and all that sort of stuff, by the start of September. Of course, Hardwood Paroxysm's got great articles, free agency takes and reviews and podcasts over on the Hardwood Paroxysm Network as well. So make sure you are checking all that great stuff out. That is it for today, Kyle. Once again, thank you for coming on.
Thanks, man. And big ups to Jazz fans for getting Boris Diaw. That's dope.
Yes, it is. He should. That team is looking pretty interesting. Very, very interesting, the Jazz. And Trey Lyles is looking absolutely sensational in Summer League, and I really like Trey Lyles. I can't wait to see him get an opportunity.
Sorry, one question. If you were to look at a team who could knock the Golden State Warriors off their championship perch eventually, are there any team, like Utah stands out as one that could develop into that kind of team for me?
Yeah, because we know Gobert.
Just to give Utah fans hope.
Nah, look, I think they're a top four seed next season, Utah. Or they've got that. That's where they should be aiming, top four.
Nice. I love it.
Cool. We are done here, guys. Thank you so much for listening, everyone. See ya.